Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, episode 33. Welcome to Women's Financial Freedom Month. And also today I have for you the ultimate guide to choosing a financial advisor. So I am declaring September Women's Financial Freedom Month this week. And for the next 4 weeks, I have an incredible lineup of shows for you that are all designed to directly benefit your sense of security, your sense of financial confidence, your knowledge of the financial world around you that's there to support you, your independence, and of course, your net worth. This month, we're celebrating all things feminine and financial, and we're standing shoulder to shoulder with our friends, our sisters, our mothers, and our daughters in partnership and as witness to our own rights to freedom. We're going to let our minds run free. We're going to leave behind any pain of the past. We're shedding all the constraints and letting our hearts and minds go to work on our vision for life that truly, truly inspires us. So I want you to let your heart and mind go to work on your vision for your life that truly inspires you. I'm really committed that you not spend your one amazing life inside limitations or not reaching the heights you truly desire just because of a misguided belief that it's not possible to get there. Anything you believe and set your mind to is possible, even if you have no idea how to achieve it on the day that you decide to believe it. And you have to know that financial freedom begins with believing that it can happen and it will happen for you. So first, today, we're going to do a check-in on the 8 fundamental principles of financial freedom, the inviolable rules of money, and I want you to take your own temperature there. It's self-reflection day. So be honest about where you're succeeding and where you're not doing so well, because the name of the game is getting on your path and staying there. Then I have for you the ultimate guide to choosing a financial advisor, because I believe that's a step that can ultimately enable your financial freedom. If you want to pick a partner, a guide, a coach who's going to not only be your technical rudder, but your confidant, and you want to do that right. So today we're going to talk about how to know what kind of advisor is right for you, about your situation, and how to know what you're getting into there. So let's start with the roadmap to economic independence, the 8 principles of financial freedom. Number 1, decide. Have you made the decision to get there no matter where you are now? Have you decided and cut off all other possible alternatives? Be honest with yourself. What's the vision you're living into on a daily basis? Because if it's disempowered, that's a function of the past. And you can call it lessons learned, but it's really just cynicism. And I forgive you, but most of all, you have to forgive you. So decide to get to financial freedom. Like, I invite everyone who joins my weekly email list to do that, to declare you're a millionaire or a millionaire to be. Create your powerful vision. It all begins with vision. Envision yourself with more money in the bank than you know what to do with, and the peace of mind and tranquility that comes with that, and what you most want those resources for. And that's what you'll have. Okay. The second principle of financial freedom is speak. After you've decided and created your vision, you have to empower it in your speaking. I talk a lot on this podcast about the importance of your language and your speaking and your declarations and your negotiations. Is your speaking aligned with your vision? If you haven't listened to episode 8 of this podcast, The Money Operating System, go back and listen to it now, because you have to master your internal programming first and then your external language. You're not saying things like, "It's not about the money," and "I can't afford that," to yourself or to others anymore when you've mastered this principle. That's not financially empowered language. Instead, try, "My bank account and my net worth will reflect my having created tremendous value in the world." Or if you're in business for yourself, try, "Happy and profitable clients hire me easily and often." Or some of the most powerful money words, "I'm going to figure out how to make that happen." Say those words to yourself and you'll know that's an inspired mental place to stand. The third principle of financial freedom is own. You take responsibility for yourself and your life and create and steward your own financial integrity. No one cares more about your money than you do. A victim mindset is not going to get you there, and letting it be in someone else's hands just takes you out of the driver's seat. You have to nominate yourself. Stop telling yourself and the world that you're not the one. You are the one. And that means you're responsible, you're accountable, and you are powerful. Now, the fourth principle of financial freedom is ask. Make bigger and bigger requests of the world. Ask for your cell phone bill to be lower and for your discounts to be higher. Negotiate your salary and raise your prices. If it's the wrong price, ask for it to be the right price, or walk away from it because you own this. Are you making big and unreasonable requests in the world? That's the fourth principle of financial freedom. Wealth in this world is limitless. You just have to direct enough of it into your own world, into your own bank accounts to sustain yourself. And part of that is making the numbers bigger by your own declaration and through your own requests. The fifth principle of financial freedom, of course, is earn. Earn. What are you earning? Take inspired action to bring high income and big assets into your financial ecosystem. Remember, you are drawing from an infinite well. The sixth principle is plan. You got to know your numbers. You got to know your income, your savings, your spending, your debt, and your net worth. Know where you're headed. Critical to the sixth principle of financial freedom is your cash flow plan. This is your get out of debt plan, which turns elegantly into your savings plan once you're out of debt. I highly recommend you follow my system of financial automation, which basically uses a system of multiple accounts to create an automated machine that assures your financial freedom. I love this system. The work of building the machine is front-loaded. I'm not telling you it's easy. It's not, but it pays off. It's like carrying around pre-planned meals with the right amount of protein, calories, fat, and carbohydrates. It's a system that if you don't break it or violate the rules you create, it assures your success. I'll include some resources in the show notes for this episode to show you how to automate. Just go to hillaryhendershot.com/33. The seventh principle of financial freedom is invest. You have to be investing with savvy. Stand on the shoulders of financial giants by leveraging index-based or asset class mutual funds. If you're unfamiliar with the term index funds, go back and listen to episode 26. If you're a client of mine, you have a very sophisticated portfolio of asset class mutual funds that leverages the best-in-class principles that make index funds so attractive, plus a few outperforming features, and you are having a world-class investment experience. As an independent investment advisor, I have the entire universe of financial investment options at my fingertips, and I truly believe that portfolio is the best one in the world for you. It's also easier and easier to get into a sophisticated index fund portfolio, but barring some complexity in your financial life, one of these options is probably going to be the way you want to go. The eighth principle of financial freedom is protect. Do not risk what you can't afford to lose, and use tools designed to protect you from loss. For example, life insurance, health insurance, automobile insurance, renter's insurance, even disability insurance. Some people choose long-term care insurance, but you also want to avoid high-risk behavior. Don't risk the things you can't afford to lose. Don't risk things that are important to you. For example, don't not eat the way you should. Don't drink more than you should, or don't drive without insurance. Once you have something to protect, protect it. So those are the eight fundamental principles of financial freedom. And if you master all eight, you will be on the path to achieving your financial goals. I would go so far as to say you will get there. But in my world, you know, I'm not allowed to say anything is guaranteed. But wow, I would just get right up there and toe that line and say, if you master those eight principles and skills, you are going to be happy and free. So here they are once again. Decide, speak, own, ask, earn, plan, invest, and protect. So be honest with yourself. Where are you doing well? And where are you committing today to learn and improve and master? Okay, so that's your Financial Freedom Month check-in. Now, let's talk about your ultimate guide to choosing a financial advisor. I'm going to start with kind of the lay of the land, the technical bits that you need to know, and then we'll talk about the more nuanced parts of finding someone with whom you can have that ultimately profitable relationship. First, let's start with the title financial advisor. Unfortunately, it means nothing, but you have to make sure that your advisor is a fiduciary. You definitely want to work with a fiduciary financial advisor. So this is from Investopedia. Investment advisors are bound to a fiduciary standard that was established as part of the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. They can be regulated by the SEC or state securities regulators, both of which hold advisors to a fiduciary standard that requires them to put their clients' interests above their own. So can you believe that there are advisors that aren't required to put their clients' interests above their own? Yes, there are. And when the courts regulate those advisors, they're held to what's called a standard of suitability. And they're often compensated on commission, and they do not have to tell you when they're selling you a product that lines their pockets. It's like going to a doctor who gets paid a commission for prescribing you a certain drug. Do you trust that doctor? He or she might be a really good person, but we're all human, and ultimately you're going to question where his priorities are. So finding a fiduciary advisor is two-part. First, they get compensated by client fees only, not commissions. And second, they are held to a fiduciary or client-first standard, and you want both features. One good metaphor I've heard to describe this is the idea of going to see a tailor to make you a dress. An advisor who is not a fiduciary is held to this standard called suitability. So back at your friendly neighborhood tailor, this guy has to make you a dress that fits on your body. It suits you, whether it's made of polyester or buttons all the way up your neck like Victorian times or has big puffy shoulders like the 1980s. The court doesn't care. That dress suits you. It fits on your body and you wear it. But a fiduciary tailor is going to make you the dress you want, the dress that's right for you, the dress you ask for, and the dress you've always dreamed of having. People who are insurance salespeople and annuity salespeople also call themselves financial advisors. So you can't tell anything about this stuff from their title. In fact, the very fact that so many salespeople started calling themselves financial advisors is the reason the government recently got involved. President Obama actually kind of kicked it off and started passing laws to make more personal finance professionals fiduciaries. But the vast majority of advisors out there are still not fiduciaries. Unfortunately, big name brand advisors are not fiduciaries, not the folks who work for a bank or a brokerage, not Merrill Lynch, not Ameriprise, not Wells Fargo, not Goldman Sachs. And I know that flies in the face of what you'd assume. We Americans love brand names. We love the trust imputed by those brands. But in this case, those advisors have clear conflicts of interest. And I often get people saying to me, but my guy is great. I really like him. He'd never do me wrong. And I'm sure your guy is great, but I get my hands on these investment statements and I see huge commissionable low performing products in the portfolio. I know you like your guy, but that guy is beholden to the portfolio of branded products sold by his bank or brokerage because that's how they make money. Normally, I'm very pro profits, but in this case, your profits are more important than their profits. So that's why you're looking for an independent advisor, someone who doesn't work for one of those big companies. So independent, fee-only fiduciary advisor. How do you know if someone fits that bill? You just ask them. I promise you, those of us who've managed to get to that place in our career and our business, we wear the badge pretty proudly. It will be on their website and their marketing materials. Again, just ask them. I am a fee-only independent fiduciary advisor. My firm's agreement with the Securities and Exchange Commission of the U.S. government does not allow me to charge commissions, and I have fully vetted all the ways I do business with the government, and my relationship with clients is as free of conflicts of interest as it is possible to be. Speaking of fees, there are three ways advisors get paid. You're probably interested to know this. Some earn commissions. We already talked about that. And you don't want to work with advisors who earn commissions. Insurance agents and real estate agents earn commissions. That's how those industries work. So I'm not protesting that. I'm specifically talking about advisors who sell stocks, annuities, or mutual funds that have what's called 12B1 or front loads. Those are all commissions. The second way advisors get paid is by charging fees. Some advisors, like me, charge an ongoing fee, a percentage of the assets that we manage. Kind of the going rate in the industry is around 1% of the assets that we manage. That's per year. Another way some advisors configure their fees is they charge a flat fee. That's usually advisors who are just starting out, or they do that as a portion of their practice because they really need to bring in the cash. Most of us graduate out of that method simply because it's extremely time consuming, it's inelegant, and it's really frustrating for clients. So I charge a percentage of the assets that I manage for clients, and all of my services are included. All of the reports and the meetings and the phone calls and the text messages and all the admin work that's necessary for each client. That way, you're not on the clock and you don't hesitate to pick up the phone or write that email, because it's important that you be in really close communication with your advisor. The third way advisors charge is some hybrid of commissions and fees. So those advisors will call themselves fee-based. That is in contrast to fee-only advisors. You want fee-only. That also means commission-free. Investment philosophy is really important. You want to know how this advisor is going to build your investment portfolio. And again, if you listen to episode 26 of this podcast, you know you will either want index funds or asset class mutual funds. You want a low-cost, high-performing investment portfolio. The evidence behind this conclusion is, at this point, totally irrefutable. There just are no active managers beating the indexes consistently. So you want to ask the advisor, is your investment methodology compatible with an index fund-based method? I can't cover that topic completely in this episode, but I will keep talking about it on this podcast over time. Now, let's talk about account size minimums. This is kind of a controversial feature of the advisor relationship. It's kind of hard for people to understand. So many of us are sensitive about how much money we have. Unfortunately, we kind of conflate our value with our money, and to be told, hey, you just don't measure up, you know, literally, is hard for people. The thing is that implementing higher and higher account size minimums really is the only way financial advisors can scale their business. I know a firm in San Francisco who doesn't work with people who have less than $3 million. It's kind of a high bar, but they have a very profitable firm. I've gone back and forth about this question in my business. I had a $1 million minimum 2 years ago, but I feel really strongly that the brand I'm creating and the business I want to build is about empowerment and it's more inclusive. So I lowered that minimum to $250,000 of investable assets. I know that's still high for a lot of people. And that is just the nature of the beast, is that you've got to get that savings up to meet a professional and experienced advisor where they are. Most advisors who are good and worth their salt are going to have some kind of minimum. Otherwise, we just don't make money. In life, it's expensive and valuable to get good, trained, experienced people working one-on-one with you to improve your life. I mean, doctors, good coaches, dentists, chiropractors, therapists all provide high value for what they charge. So my experience is you just get to a point in your life where you realize, okay, it is worth it for me to invest in those services because I want to surround myself with people who are committed to my success. After all, I could spend my time and gain the expertise, but my time is the only resource I can never, ever, ever get back. So I'm going to trade my money for more time on vacation, more time spent with family, more time spent doing the things that I love and consuming and creating the experience that inspire me in life. So let's talk about credentials. Most financial advisors have alphabet soup after their names. And I'll tell you, it's mostly because financial people are analytical and we'd much rather study than sell. Well, and be rejected, right? So we cross our fingers that the alphabet soup will impress you and get you to work with us. But, you know, that doesn't really work, does it? First, most of the alphabet soup are voluntary credentials we earn, not degrees, most of them. Recently, there are undergraduate degree programs in financial planning. I know they're out there, but they're really new. So folks who've graduated with those degrees now, they're probably still cutting their teeth in the industry. Let's start with the most popular designations. First, there's the CFP. That is the gold standard. It's conferred by the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards. It's really rigorous and pretty popular amongst us fee-only fiduciaries. It's kind of like the academic requirement of a master's degree. Again, it's not a master's degree, but you take 6 or 7 master's level courses at a local college, and the courses cover the topics of investments, insurance, estate planning, retirement plans, income tax, etc. Then you sit for a beast of an exam. So when I took it, it was 10 hours and 2 days long, but I think they made it just 1 day now. So fooey on you all. But even after you pass the exam, you have to have worked with clients for 3 years to actually use the mark after your name. So it carries with it some measure of credibility. That said, not all CFPs are fiduciaries, so make sure you know who you're talking to. Less popular than the CFP, but probably even more comprehensive, is the Master's in Financial Services. That is a master's degree, typically conferred by the American College. So if you see that, you can bet that person really knows their stuff. But the CFP really has risen to be the gold standard designation. The other one I always hear mentioned, but it kind of confuses me, is the CFA. That's Chartered Financial Analyst. This designation actually has very little to do with financial planning, but it does mean that you're dealing with a highly smart and analytical person. I mean, passing the exam to get that designation is just brutal. It's really hard. The CFA essentially trains people to build investment portfolios. So it's like being trained as a Wall Street active investor. But again, if you listen to episode 26 of this podcast, you know that active investors basically charge a really high price for a service that they don't provide. I said active investors, but I actually meant active managers. So 96% of active managers are not going to outperform a simple buy and hold of an index portfolio over a short 10-year period of time. And we don't know how to identify the 4% that are going to outperform. And plus, they're always changing. So building portfolios, actually selecting stocks, is an activity that for most of us financial advisors these days is somewhat automated. I mean, there really is a best portfolio, and your advisor shouldn't be out there trying to reinvent the wheel. That's active investing. For me, when I want to build a portfolio for a new client, each time I reach into my bag of best practices and rely on procedures that have already been created and approved of by my investment committee. In other words, I have CFAs and even Nobel Prize winners working for me on my investment committee. So my clients have hired a CFP to guide their choices and several CFAs and Nobel Prize winners to guide their investments. So again, not totally sure that person having a CFA is qualified to be your financial advisor, but they are very, very smart. The other designations that are out there are basically ancillary specialization marks. So you have specialties in things like divorce planning and specialties in working with seniors. And here are just a few of those. The CTFA is a certified trust and financial advisor. That's for bankers. The CLU is the chartered life underwriter. That's for life insurance agents. The REBC is registered employee benefits consultant. That's for people who work on large employee benefits plans. The CHFC is a chartered financial consultant. It's similar to the CFP, but not nearly as rigorous. The CPA is a certified public accountant. These folks are qualified to do audits of large companies and also sometimes prepare your individual tax returns. A CPA designation does not mean that person is a financial advisor at all. Once you're a CPA, you can get a PFS, which is a personal financial specialist. But again, most of the time when I see tax planners who are also being a financial advisor, it's because they don't want to refer their clients to a financial advisor. They're trying to straddle both sides of the line and not doing either one well. In my opinion, you should have two specialists. You should have a tax planner and a trained financial advisor. There's also a title called Registered Representative, or RR. This is just a basic legal title given by the SEC to those who have passed the Series 7 exam, which means they can trade stocks. So not very meaningful for you. And then there's a designation called CIC, or Chartered Investment Counselor. In order to be a Chartered Investment Counselor, you have to also be a CFA. Now, I said before, the CFA is really hard to get. So you can imagine if you have a CFA and a CIC, and the CIC is about more mutual fund specialization, that person is very technically smart. but still no training in estate planning, tax planning, insurance, and like that. Now, I have an MBA. That's a master's in business administration. Do you need that to be a financial advisor? No, you do not. I wish I could say yes. Does it make me a better financial advisor? Of course, I think so. I took an investments class from Mayor Statman, who's a world-renowned behavioral finance expert quoted in the Wall Street Journal. He was my actual professor in my program. I took courses on specializations under alternative investing and like that. What did I learn in those courses? I learned that my clients shouldn't be doing them. So while I'm glad I have an MBA, no, you don't need it to be a financial advisor. There's a couple other things people sometimes use, in my opinion, to confuse people. So I actually own an RIA, a registered investment advisory firm. So you could say I am an RIA. Now, I'm not supposed to say that because it sounds impressive and people might think that it carries with it some qualification of education. It does not. It simply is a legal entity that I own. It has a relationship with the US government, but it doesn't mean that I have any kind of education, specifically education. There's also IAR, or investment advisor representative. Again, anyone working for an RIA is an IAR. Yes, total alphabet soup. It's really, really complex. An investment advisor representative also does not carry with it any standard of education or training or practice. So that doesn't mean anything to you. The last one I'm going to talk about is the IA, or investment advisor, or FIA, financial investment advisor. That's just a slang acronym. It means absolutely nothing. So to cap it off, the main thing you're looking for is a certified financial planner designation or something similar to it, that advisor can say to you, look, I have education in the areas of personal finance that are necessary: income tax, investments, retirement plans, estate planning. You want someone who knows all of those aspects. You want to check out this financial advisor. You want to make sure they don't have any disciplinary actions filed. So go to FINRA's broker check site. I'll link to that in the show notes. Also, you can verify their designation at the appropriate place. I'll link to the place where you can verify the CFP designation. Incidentally, the CFP board, as of this recording, still has me listed as Hillary Martin, which is my maiden name. Check out the advisor's web presence and their LinkedIn profile. You know, are they cultivating a consistent presence? And is that presence aligned with what you want it to be aligned with? If they're publishing articles or posts, are they aligned with your thinking, your needs, and your priorities? If an advisor is marketing himself to airline pilots and you're a high-tech marketing professional, you might not feel like that aligns with your needs, but you also might feel like, hey, that really doesn't matter to me. I really want to work with this person. What's important to you about your relationship with your advisor? For example, is it critical that you be able to drive down the street and see them? When I founded my firm, I wanted to be able to work with clients all over the country. And now I'm working with several people in many different states: Washington, Texas, Florida. I figure the more broadly you can cast that net, the more choice you'll have. But for some people, the idea that you can't just sit in the same room with that advisor four times a year is unacceptable. So hey, you have to make your choice that works for you. I get out to see my out-of-area clients as often as I can. I have dinner with them, or I visit with them where they are. I mean, airline tickets are cheap, right? So it's a long-term relationship, and I make that investment. I meet with my clients on Skype and other virtual meeting software, and I even have clients here in my hometown of San Jose, California, that don't want to meet with me in person because they have kids and their evenings are busy and booked. For me, it's however and whenever they want to meet. So what demographic do you want to work with? The average age of a financial advisor is 55 years old. And if you're in your 40s or younger, the reality is that that person will likely be out of the business before your money outlives you. So you'll need to find a new advisor at some point. So just think about that. You should have good rapport with your advisor. Your financial advisor should be your buddy. You should feel comfortable sharing with her fairly intimate details of your life. This person is a coach and a confidant with the technical skills to back it up. So you should feel really comfortable saying, hey, I'm dating someone new, because that might impact your financial life. Or I'm thinking about having another kid. Or do I really need to pay a lawyer to create a trust for me? What kind of clients does this advisor specialize in working with? Some specialize in teachers or professors or pilots. As you know, I specialize in working with and empowering women. But that said, many of my favorite clients are men, and most of us women are either married or want to be married, so a good 25 to 30% of my clients are men. And imagine how cool those men are, being willing to work with an advisor who has a purple website and talks to women the way I do and publishes about women's economic empowerment. I have very cool clients. And do you prefer to work with a man or a woman? As of 2016, the financial services industry is largely dominated by white males nearing retirement age. And I talk to a lot of women who feel that their white male financial advisor talks down to them, uses lots of Wall Street jargon, but never really provides actionable or understandable advice. Now, when you ask women whether they prefer to work with a male or female advisor, to me, it's surprising that only a small number of women say they prefer working with a woman. This always really confused me until I read a research study that showed that even women are entrenched with really deep-seated sexist views. It turns out that even today, if you sit someone down and you play for them a man's voice and a woman's voice saying the exact same thing, both men and women will rate the woman's voice as less credible. It kind of breaks my heart. So I ask you, if your initial response to the question of what gender professionals you prefer to work with is neutral, or if you lean toward working with a man, can you ask yourself why? Ask yourself, do I naturally think men are more credible? And given that isn't actually borne out by the data, it isn't like men are naturally smarter than women, am I comfortable with that response in myself? Is that something I'm going to let go unexamined? Just something to think about there. I believe you should have an advisor who offers comprehensive advice. You want someone who's going to be your financial quarterback, tying together the various aspects of your life and making sure you don't get contradictory advice from your other professionals. You want someone who knows that you need, for example, tax-wise investments in your taxable accounts and who understands the value of having a living will and a revocable living trust, even though financial advisors don't provide those things. So just ask, do you offer comprehensive financial advice? Will you review my insurance and my legal documents for me? Can I run a possible mortgage refi by you? Their answer, in my opinion, should be yes. So if you've gotten this far, I have an invitation for you. If you're considering hiring a financial advisor, or you're unhappy with your current advisor because the relationship isn't solid, or you've learned on this podcast that some of the aspects of the way that person does business aren't what you'd like them to be, and you'd like to talk with me about whether we'd be a good fit to work together, I'm inviting you to reach out today and schedule a call just to see. I believe you should have a relationship in place that serves you and provides value for you, and I promise I'll be totally straightforward and let you know if I think I can be that person or not. If you want to learn how to grow your wealth and your financial confidence this year, I'm inviting you to schedule a 15-minute call with me to find out. I'm going to give you two ways to do that. Either call this toll-free number or just click on the show notes for this episode in your podcast app, and there's a live clickable link to a landing page where you can leave me and my team your name and email address, and we'll help you schedule that appointment. So the toll-free number is 877-569-5508. That's 877-569-5508. If you're using the podcast app on an Apple device, in order to access the clickable link, go to the show listing in the app, click on the three horizontal dots on the right, and click View Full Description, and you'll see the clickable link there. Once again, that toll-free number is 877-569-5508. I hope you found this show really valuable, and I hope to talk with you about your financial freedom soon.
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.